Hi, everybody. Steve Savitsky back here with Peter Abelow today. Peter, for those of you who read the Jewish Action, I'm sure you all know Peter Abelow, and we're going to get to meet him up front and in person. Peter, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. Baruch Hashem, very well, thank you.
That's great to hear. Well, you've been a contributor to the Jewish Action for how many years now?
Well, I think probably going on 10 years, if not more than 10 years.
10 years, wow! We look forward to your articles; they're always so interesting. So you're a tour guide also in Israel. I mean, I know you. I mean, the people who don't know Peter, Peter is a multifaceted individual. There's nothing he can't do. But among his many skills, I believe you're also a tour guide in Israel. Correct?
Right. I'm not so sure about the nothing I can't do. There are probably many things I can't do. But my change of direction when we made Aliyah, now it's over 20 years ago, we're in Israel 22 years, was to take the tour guide course, become a licensed tour guide, and that kind of opened up a whole new direction for me, a whole new career, so to speak.
And I know that you always write about interesting places. I mean, it's interesting because Israel's a small country. The people who read the Jewish Action, our readership, people who listen online, you know, we go to Israel a lot and more than most people. And yet, I always find it interesting because you're always talking about a place that I've never been to. Boy, for a small country, we keep finding new places, don't we?
It's becoming increasingly more challenging, though. But I really try. I think that we're a phenomenal country, and especially in this day and age when we're so maligned, it's good to see the side of Israel, which is innovative and creative, at the same time historical and rich in our roots, both from the biblical period as well as the period of the Mishnah, the Talmud. It's an extremely rich country in that regard.
No, absolutely. Now, I know that, we're going to be, this is probably going to air in probably the fall of 2012. And so we have people who are going to be listening who probably are going to be going to Israel in the winter time. And I don't think the winter is as busy a season, correct, for tourism as it is, let's say, the spring or the summer, or certainly the Chagim.
Correct. I mean, look, there's a surge during the winter break. There's a surge during the yeshiva week, and a surge, of course, right after for Pesach and right after Pesach with Yom HaTzmut. The big seasons are obviously the summer, especially for families that are traveling.
So you're going to go, let's say someone goes in the winter, and I've gone many times in the winter. Actually, the truth of the matter is I kind of like it there in the winter in a way. I think of the hot summer days and walking on the streets or taking a hike, and I think of the winter, and it's almost refreshing. But let's talk about some places. I mean, so you go to Israel, you have some kids, you want to do some interesting things. What would you recommend?
Well, listen, you can get some lovely, lovely days in the wintertime as well. It's, of course, our rainy season. We're davening already for rain, and we pray that we have a tremendous amount of rain because that's obviously the lifeblood of the country in the dry months after Pesach. And so on the one hand, tourists joke that they should pray that it pours at night, but during the day it's lovely and sunny and bright and fun to tour. It doesn't always work that way. And so you have to really anticipate the possibility that our fields are being answered, and you're going to hit a couple of really crummy, heavy rain days where it's just virtually impossible to do things outdoors. So you're going to have to plan both things in mind.
Okay, so let's look at both. Let's say the weather is inclement. Some of the things you have teenage kids, or let's say you have, let's first look at younger kids. So what's there to do for younger kids?
Depends on where you're coming from and what the interests of the kids are. I'm a firm believer that, especially in the world, in our world, that we want to make Israel. It's always been my philosophy of education in general that Jewish education and a visit to Israel have to be pleasant and delightful and fun, and all the associations with a visit to Israel should be wonderful, positive ones, in order to implant that connection that Israel is just a we're personally connected with it, and it's a place I want to be at. And so, although there's an urge to want to do things in Pulat Tanakh and sort of do the kind of stuff they do in school, you have to know your kids, you have to know what turns them on and what turns them off, and design your days appropriately. Outdoors, anything that you can do in the summertime. If it's a nice day, you can generally do over the winter time. Not some of the water stuff like rafting. Those things are closed in the winter time. But any of the sites that you visit in the summer are delightful on a nice winter day. Masada, instead of 110 degrees, could be a very pleasant 75, 80 degrees.
Right.
And you that's
the point. That's what I was saying. I mean, go to Masada in the winter. If it's not raining, it's really nice. It's a great place to go.
100%.
Right.
Absolutely.
Right.
And it's much more pleasant on a lovely winter day than it is on a beastly hot June, July, August day.
Right, right. I agree with you, absolutely. And so, I mean, the hiking is always, so what's your favorite place to go hiking?
Favorite place to go hiking?
Unless you don't go hiking, I don't know.
No, I actually still do. I mean, Baruch Hashem, you know, mid-60s, and I'm still able to do the hikes, and it's a lot of fun. So I'll tell you, there are a couple of really wonderful hikes. There's a lovely, lovely Maslul, or route, in the Negev, right outside of Stable Care, which is David Ben-Gurion's kibbutz.
Right. Right.
Also a wonderful place to visit, by the way. But there's a hike maybe 2-3 kilometers just south of Stable Care, between Stable Care and Mitzpe Ramon, called Nahal Chavarim. It's just a wonderful, relatively easy and relatively short hike into the desert. Within 5 minutes, you don't feel the road that you've just left. And for the next hour and a half, you're literally walking in the desert with absolutely no sign whatsoever of the civilization around you. We sent a lot of our groups on that hike because you just get a feel of what it must have been like for Am Yisrael to be in the desert during that period of wandering when you were so totally dependent on not technology because your cell phones don't work there, but literally on a Kodesh Baruch Hu. It's just a magnificent hike and a magnificent experience.
So that's one that we very strongly recommend. What about Stable Care? I mean, I tell you the truth. I have to admit, I've never been there. I don't know why, but I haven't. What is there to do there? They have a museum? Or
They have a museum in the home that became David Ben-Gurion's desert. He was a member of Kibbutz Stable Care.
Right, right.
And a visit to his thrift or to his home is a very, very eye-opening experience. It's very, very well preserved. There's a questionnaire, by the way, for children, which has now been written in English as well as in Hebrew, to add interest to the visit. Kids go around kind of like with a, not quite a scavenger hunt, but searching for things within the museum that's become his home and filling in the answers in like a crossword puzzle kind of framework, which adds interest and challenge to the visit for younger children. And the truth is, look, we have a lot to learn from David Ben-Gurion. There's a lot that one might criticize him, but the leadership that he brought to fore in the 1930s and 1940s, the qualities of leadership, we have an awful lot to gain from understanding the drive of the individual. Fascinating, by the way, and I always point this out when I guide in Stable Care, unlike many of today's secular Jews, I'm going to qualify that, David Ben-Gurion was clearly secular, he was not religious at all, but was Yodea Sefer. He knew Tanakh, he knew Gemara. He was the classic example of not only an intellectual, but an educated, knowledgeable secular Jew.
Wow.
That's definitely missing today, by the way.
And
you have on his desk a psukim of Isaiah predicting the return of the Jewish people to the Negev and rebuilding the Negev. And indeed, one of his dreams and visions was driven by those prophecies of the prophet Isaiah.
Well, you know, talking about the Negev, I mean, as a tour guide, I mean, I'm always fascinated when I go there just to see what's going on. So what are some of the things to see in the Negev that, you know, that maybe some people don't know about?
So you have the area of Stable Care. Outside of Beersheba is the Air Force Base in a place called Chatzarim. It's about 10 minutes out on the western side of Beersheba. An awful lot of fun. You walk on the tarmac and see a lot of the planes, and you know, kids particularly enjoy that.
It's open to the public? That Air Force Base is open to the public?
Open to the public.
Really? Oh, okay.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Oh, absolutely. It's the Central Air Force Base, and they have exhibits. The exhibit hall is a lot of high-tech things. You get a glimpse of the uniforms that Israeli pilots wear and some of the high technology that they take to the skies with them. Rather fascinating and enjoyable visit. Actually, one of the highlights is a movie in one of the actual 747s that accompanied the raid on Entebbe in 1976. So into the jet and you sit in the plane, and that's where they screen the film about the Air Force in Hebrew as well as in English. Very nice, very nicely done and fun. And the Negev gets a lot less rain, obviously, than the northern part of the country. So we try to even, when we plan group trips, put a more of an emphasis on time in the Negev and less in the Galil, only because the odds are you're going to have better weather in the Negev.
Okay, so that's a good thing to know. So if you're going in the wintertime, probably try to do more things in the Negev and not
Absolutely.
So much up north. Ah, interesting.
Correct.
Interesting.
So I guess Beit Ramon is a lovely area overlooking the Machtesis. Often miscalled a crater. It's not, but let's call it for simplicity. Beautiful geology. A tremendous opportunity to appreciate the magnificent beauty of the country.
And when you go further down,
I think the Negev, by the way, is absolutely special. The Negev is just beautiful, beautiful area of the country.
Do you think they're actually going to be, I know they're building it. I know the Ben-Gurion University is very, very big already. But do you see that in the future? You see hundreds of thousands of Jews actually moving into the Negev and that becoming the place where we'll become much more populated?
Ben-Gurion did. Do I actually see it? City of Be'er Sheva, I think today over 200,000 people. Fourth largest city in Israel.
It's a big city.
City of Arad, growing beautiful city. Dimona, people joke about Dimona because we kind of know it's there. A beautiful growing city. There are kibbutzim, moshavim all over the Negev. And people are being drawn to it. Not in the numbers that they're attracted to Tel Aviv area or the Merkaz and Yerushalayim for different reasons. But the Negev is potentially an area that has to be settled, will be settled, and I think that Ben-Gurion's vision will someday be brought to fruition in the Negev.
And if you're kind of traveling now up north and, you're going to some of those cities, what are some of the highlights, you think, especially if you have kids? What do you think they'd like to see up in Rosh HaNikra? What are the areas that you really think are really special?
So Rosh HaNikra is lovely. It's beautiful geology and a very special spot, and kids enjoy that. Remember, I think our goal with kids is to make the trip fun and enjoyable. The city of Akko today, or Acre, has made tremendous strides in upgrading its tourist-friendly posture. You can spend easily a half a day in Akko, not only in the Crusader ruins and, of course, the history of Israel in 1948, part of the story that Juris told so eloquently in Exodus is reenacted in the prison in Akko. There's a wonderful truth, maybe an article in one of my future Jewish Action articles, a Tunisian shul in Akko, in which a person has dedicated the last 40 or 50 years of his life to covering every open section of space, walls, floors, ceilings, with mosaics. And it's an incredible, incredible thing to see. So that's certainly worth a visit in Akko. It's worth finding the phone number, going and seeing it.
Okay, that's great. That's really great to know.
Extremely unusual. Again, in the wintertime, you're balancing between a nice day or a rainy, yucky day when you have to really look for indoor alternatives. Also in that area, by the way, as long as you're asking about the north, Steve, everybody knows of Yad Vashem as Israel's National Holocaust Museum. And truth is, look, people come. Even people who've been to Israel somehow feel compelled to take their kids and use the opportunity, despite the education they're getting, to renew a sense of understanding of the Holocaust at Yad Vashem. There's a wonderful museum which is directed specifically to kids and which is kid-friendly. It's the story of the Shoah being told through the perspective of kids in a kibbutz called Kibbutz Lochamei HaGetaot, which is just north of Akko, and highly, highly recommended as a place to visit if you're in the north, especially with children, if they want to get a sense of the Holocaust. The voiceovers and the exhibits are the voices of children. The exhibits are from the perspectives of children. There's hands-on activities within the children's section. Very, very powerful and effective place to message the Holocaust to children. And by the way, clearly focused on not so much the event, I wouldn't say not so much, but equally to the events of the Holocaust as the aftermath and the survivors who then came to Israel and as pioneers built Israel.
Wow,
I would clearly say Lochamei HaGetaot and the Yad LeYeled are highly recommended up in the north.
Okay, that's really great. Now, there are always museums, I know. I'm always amazed. And every time I go to Israel, there's always another museum. Are there some new museums opening up or not?
So there's a new museum, which I actually haven't gotten to yet. They've been calling me to come and visit and perhaps even write an article for them in Tveria, dedicated to the Rambam.
Really? Oh, wow.
So again, I'm leaving this with a question mark. They're saying wonderful place to come if you're in Tveria in the wintertime when it's pouring, or in the summertime when it's beastly hot outside, because Tveria can be very hot outside because it's air-conditioned. Again, I'm saying it with advisement. I'm certainly think it's worthwhile going to, although I haven't been there myself yet, and I hope to visit it soon, and as I say, possibly even write an article about that as well.
When did this museum open up, the one about the Rambam?
I would say within the last year, year and a half.
Really?
2 years, perhaps.
Interesting.
It's fairly recent. Yeah.
Now, I want to ask you a question about the museums, because this is a question that a lot of people ask me, and I feel the same way. I've been to the Begin Museum, which is beautiful, but you don't have time to really get to spend time there, because you feel like you're being rushed out. I mean, is there any way to go to a museum like the Begin Museum and spend more time, or is it just set up in such a way that you're in and out, and that's what it is?
Yeah, and you've, I think, underscored the disadvantage, although I think the Begin Museum and two others which are built in the same style, the Herzl Museum on Mount Herzl and the Palmach Museum in Tel Aviv, in Ramat Aviv, are all patterned on this. I mean, I call it like an Epcot kind of model, where you go in and you're ushered through at their pace without really having time to absorb the exhibits and take in what's around you. And that is a disadvantage. The more classic museums, the Israel Museum has recently been redone within the last 2-3 years,
right,
and the exhibits are just magnificent.
Great.
There's a children's wing in the Israel Museum. Right nearby, by the way, is a hands-on science museum, which is wonderful. It matches any hands-on museum in America. And listen, I'm big on messaging Hebrew as the language of our people. You know, I think looking back on my years in Chinuch in America, if I were to today look back on one of my failures, it was not realizing strongly enough how Hebrew has to be taught to Americans, to American kids, as the language of our people and not another foreign language. I'm going to go into that. That's not the topic of our talk now. I think it's fabulous to go into a museum where the exhibits are in Hebrew. Yeah. And it conveys that notion of Hebrew as a living language. I think it's one of the challenges that American Jewry faces today, that of reconnecting with Hebrew in some way. I don't know that it's being done effectively yet.
Well, yeah, probably not. So wintertime is like everything. Wintertime is, there's always special things to do in Israel and special places to go. I think you've given us some idea. Just really before we end the interview, tell me about what you wrote about in the Jewish Action in the winter edition. You always write about interesting things, so people will be getting it shortly. So what did you write about this time?
So the winter edition of Jewish Action features an endeavor on Kibbutz Stei Eliyahu, which is one of the cluster of religious kibbutzim just south of Beit She'an. Kibbutz that, by the way, has maintained its traditional kibbutz ideology and met, 30, 40 years ago, began to find ways to meet the challenge of creating organic farming for themselves. And it led to an entire industry. Today, they're probably on the cutting edge of some of the most up-to-date technology of green farming. The touring is a tour that they offer, which is fascinating, called Bio-B. They take you around. The entire agricultural operation of the kibbutz today is completely organic, and they are marketing the techniques of organic farming to not only Israel, but to the United States and to the entire world. And the I found the tour fascinating, and that was the subject of the winter edition article.
Fantastic, wonderful. Well, listen, Peter, thank you so much, first of all, for contributing to the Jewish Action, and certainly, I guess, people who come to Israel should definitely be looking you up, because you're going to take them to interesting places and perhaps places they haven't been to, and I highly recommend it. So thank you so much, Peter, and you've given us some new insight, and we really appreciate it. Have a wonderful day, and thank you so much. Bye-bye.
You're very welcome, Stephen. Thank you very much for the opportunity.
My pleasure. Bye-bye.